You're listening to a curated podcast from the Beyond Infinity radio program, broadcast live on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. from our Mornington studios in Victoria, Australia. Listen live on 98.7 or 98.3 FM or stream live from rppfm.com.au. Presented by me, Piers Cunningham.
And me, John Young.
Moving into our science and tech news for the week. Google, which has made a lot of money and has a very successful business model, which is scanning your emails. Mm-hmm. If you're a user of Gmail, like a lot of people are, popular service. What they do is they scan your emails to serve ads which are appropriate to what you're emailing about. So if you've sent an email to a guy at a car shop expressing interest in a particular kind of car, well, miraculously, you'll see ads mm-hmm. for that very kind of car sitting in the right-hand margin of the page next to the text in the email. They've basically said that they're not going to do this anymore. According to a blog post published last Friday by Google Cloud Senior Vice President Diane Greene, the search giant and Gmail giant is going to end this practice. Mm-hmm. And that's not just for professional users using the sort of premium version of Gmail, which is called G Suite, but also for just your everyday consumers who are getting the free version with 15 gigabytes mm-hmm. of free data. You will no longer have that impost made. And I guess it actually opens the door to end-to-end encryption, which up until now, Gmail hasn't been able to offer.
That's right.
Because otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to scan your emails for that advertising information.
It's a welcome move, but you have to question, well, if they're willing to forgo that to learn more about you, then they must be learning enough about you in other ways.
From other means, yes. And the suggestion is that from, for example, YouTube, which is another Google property, mm-hmm. that they can either get your IP address, or if you're registered with YouTube, then they've got information about what you've been looking at as well. So there are other ways that they can get that information. But I guess the real plus will be if they introduce end-to-end encryption, because that will obviously make your emails more secure. Just moving on with the news, LRO, which is the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, has a very high resolution camera on board, which has been photographing. I think they've mapped nearly 75% of the lunar surface now in really unprecedented detail. Mm. One of the things they've found is there's a lot of areas of the lunar surface which have been resurfaced recently. So they count craters to work out how old a body is. Mm-hmm. And obviously our moon is covered in craters. Mm-hmm. So the presumption is that the surface is very ancient and that it hasn't changed in a long time.
Yep.
The assumption was that it was in fact billions of years ago. That
it was bombarded in a heavy bombardment.
Yeah, that's right. And then, we haven't had any volcanism or geologic activity since before then, because mm-hmm. otherwise you wouldn't see, you know, volcanoes erupt and they resurface.
Yep.
But what's happening is with this high resolution camera that LRO is carrying is that they've actually found areas that have been resurfaced. Mm. And it actually ties in with some Apollo 15 and Apollo 17 data from back in the early 1970s mm-hmm. when they took along instruments which actually measured the temperature of the lunar surface and a little bit down below as well.
And it was warmer than they expected.
And it was warmer than they expected. And they sort of put it down at the time. They thought, oh, maybe we've got a problem with the instruments, or maybe we just happened to have found a couple of warmer areas. Mm-hmm. But what they're finding with this LRO data is that volcanism is quite widely spread. There's signs of volcanism, mm-hmm. possibly going back as recently as 60 million years ago, that kind of stuff. So much more recently than the billions of years ago that previously thought when they did their crater counts. The volcanism on the moon did not end abruptly, but rather decreased gradually over time. And it may even not be done with yet. So there may even be radioactive elements in the center of the moon, which are keeping things warm or hot. Mm-hmm. And that could even be leading to geologic activity even today. So we are finding out more things about the moon with Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. That very high resolution camera is helping us do that. Now, China is seeking to create a new category of cheap electric small car, and at about $10,000 Australian, you'll be able to buy a thing. It's by a company called CHJ Automotive. It's a Chinese startup, and it's the latest player looking to come to this ultra compact electric car market. One of the reasons why they've brought this 2.5 by 1 meter wide car, so it's a pretty compact little thing, to market is that in China, in particular, they have 300 million people a day use e-scooters to get to and from work. Mm. And there is a demand for something a bit more comfortable, a bit better than sitting on
maybe
a little electric.
Maybe more enclosed if it's hot or cold.
Exactly. Less vulnerable to the pollution and other stuff that's in the atmosphere, cold, weather, rain and so on. So there is demand from those people on those electric motorbikes for an upgrade. And this is one of the key things that this company, CHJ Automotive, is aiming to satisfy. In fact, there are 340 million people doing a daily commute on e-scooters in China. Now, in Europe, they plan to release the car as well. This is early next year is the projected launch date. These things, we know from experience, can be delayed. You just have to go and ask Elon Musk and Tesla to know about that. They aim to release them in Europe with a different business model, and they've teamed up with a Paris-based company where they'll use them for ride sharing. Mm-hmm. So they won't be available to buy in Europe, but there'll be fleets of them used for ride sharing purposes. They're also aiming to release an SUV, which will cost about $30,000 US, and that's a much bigger car.
And it's generally the engine and the batteries that's going to be quite high cost, but you hope they haven't reduced the cost by cutting out any safety measures that are, you know, if it was to be brought into Australia, it has to have a minimum safety standard. It doesn't sort of cover what's incorporated into the vehicle, but...
Well, one of the clever things is it has two batteries, so the idea is that you drive along, you exhaust one battery, then you stop at a station and just replace the battery, take it physically out of the car, put in a fully charged one.
So rather than plugging in and waiting hours.
Yeah, and then run down the other battery, the second battery, and then swap that over. So you've always got a fully charged battery on board, which gets rid of that range anxiety that people can feel with electric cars. There is a service if you're on Facebook, and this is a slightly oddball story, but there's a thing called Girlfriend Hire. This offers a broad assortment of flings for your dollar, and these appear on your Facebook wall. So for $5, you can get one of these sort of pretend girlfriends to send you a cute text message. They can also be your Facebook girlfriend for $5, and they'll send you flirty messages on your Facebook wall.
But each interaction is a cost.
Each interaction is a cost. So, I mean, you really got to be... This is for guys, I presume this is for people who really want to leave the impression with their real friends that they actually have a girlfriend. One of the downsides is that if you've got any real girls that might be interested in you, them seeing all this flirtation on Facebook is going to perhaps discourage them and think, oh, well, this guy's taken.
And I'd be pretty safe to say that these are a bot or fake profiles that are set up to create this. So even doing a little bit of surface investigation, you'd be able to see that and look at, you know, the friends of this person and say, well, you know, how does Piers know this girl over here or, you know, whoever it happens to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could think that you could envisage situations where this could be sort of abused and be used to sort of, you know, put pressure on marriages and solid relationships and stuff as well.
But so what's to stop me from then paying, you know, this person
to get onto my feed?
Or to somebody else's, yours? Feed. Yeah, yes. Say, that, you know.
Presumably there are restrictions that Facebook has that that in order for this sort of service to be active.
I think you have to accept if I was to say, look, we're friends. My partner, you know, if I say she is my partner, we're in a relationship, then she has to accept that as well. So there's probably, you know, those kind of safety measures there.
So there you go. If you really want to impress or otherwise people on Facebook and make it look like you've got a girlfriend, there is a service, $5 a text message or $5 a post on your wall, Girlfriend Hire.
Or get Tinder, it's free.
Or get a life. Yeah. Just finally from me before I hand over to John with the rest of the science and technology news for the week, the Trump administration is under pressure. They've actually been sued by two government watchdog groups, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington and the National Security Archive, for deleting information which relates to presidential decisions. You could sort of understand them doing this because there have been a lot of leaks out of the White House since the new administration was sworn in. They use encrypted messaging apps like Signal and Confide, and one of the accusations of this lawsuit is that they shouldn't be allowed to do that because
it's public office.
In 25 or 30 years' time, when the dust settled of the Trump administration, let's hope, there's the possibility that people want to go back and they want to explain why a particular decision was made by the executive. And they need complete records, complete archives of everything. And what they're saying is that this either using encrypted communication methods within the White House or, in fact, deleting tweets and anything, any communication, is actually against the law. And this lawsuit points this out. It even makes a suggestion that there was an instance in November last year when Trump deleted a tweet about meeting with generals at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. So there you go. There is pressure mounting for more transparency and openness from the US administration.
And a little bit more, I guess, on the US Republican news. Mm-hmm. There was actually some data exposed this month, which is gathered on more than 198 million US citizens. So these are voters of the Republican Party or people that have more on the Republican side. And this was a data leak that wasn't necessarily a hack. It was more probably carelessness on behalf of the company that collected it.
Right.
So during the campaign of 2016, there was data collected through a variety of methods. I mean, there's data available online that you can gather for free, but there's also people that can go and knock on doors to find out, you know, what are your thoughts on gun ownership or stem cell research or abortion or religious affiliation and ethnicity.
Mm.
So all of that data was captured by people knocking on doors and through other surveys. And this was then put together into a massive document along with home address, birth dates, phone numbers, and other sort of records that they could get at the time. This data company that actually gathered this then used a proprietary system to clean all of that up. They had this pristine database they could look at, and they could get the sense of where voters were heading. Were they going to vote more Trump? Were they going to vote other directions? Were they on the edge? You know, what were their thoughts? You do need that analysis if you're a political party. The problem is if you don't protect that data, it gets out. And this is what's happened. These almost 200 million US citizens have had their data leaked. And as I said earlier, it was actually not by necessarily hacking, but they stored it on Amazon's cloud storage system, and which many people do, many businesses do.
Yep.
But there was a link to this document that if anyone in the public gained access to this link, they could just download that. And sure enough, it was exposed. So was this data.
Mm.
It just goes to show that no matter what you're doing, where you're storing the data, you have to have really good security protocols. And it's about, you know, correct passwords. It's about how you store that information, because no doubt there'll be lawsuits to follow from this one.
Indeed.
Now, last week we did talk about jobs being replaced by robots. You know, we have now robotic burger flippers that will be taking over the jobs from people working in, say, for example, McDonald's or fast food outlets.
Yep.
And this week we see a story where Wall Street actually has basically cheered or the replacement of cashiers with kiosks in McDonald's. So we're familiar to those here in Australia. We've got the kiosk little operation. You go up and you've got the touch screen, you can place your order. And Australia is a bit of a testing ground for a number of things that happen in McDonald's, because if it works well in our market, they then maybe take that idea back to America.
Right.
And so basically McDonald's have said that they're going to upgrade 2,500 restaurants to the experience of the future. And this is going to be happening by the end of this year, and it'll include these digital ordering kiosks. So that sure saw a jump in their share price, up from $142 to $180 US. But this means that it's going to affect people that work in these roles. So if you're a McDonald's employee, you might be fearful for your future job. Those jobs of the future will probably become less and less. It will be more cleaners. It will be maybe just moving the objects rather than being a cashier or actually making the burgers. And even then, those jobs are under threat.
Mm.
Just finally from me, just I guess a little bit more on automation, AI, but accounting. So jobs of the future, we've talked about it many times. Accounting is under attack, and so are investors, hedge fund investors. People base a lot of decisions on fact, but there's also an emotional aspect of it as well.
Mm.
And there's a herd mentality. If, we're seeing that at the moment with Bitcoin. So if there's a lot of interest in Bitcoin, there's a lot of faith and happiness, then people are, yes, buy, buy, buy. But then all of a sudden the price drops a little bit, and then there's fear, and therefore it's sell, sell, sell. There's a lot of that herd mentality, and this can be a problem for markets. There's some developers now that are working on algorithms with deep neural networks and looking at how they can predict, where the money is going. Is it going up in a certain stock? And if it is, buy. If it's going down, is it time to sell? Then sell it out. I'll put a link to this story, but it's basically pointing the finger now at anyone that's in investing or in accounting, that the algorithms are coming for you.
Thanks for listening.
And head to beyondinfinity.com.au for the best bits from the live show, or to connect with us on social media. We welcome your feedback and suggestion for future shows.